You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Dr. Pry, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dave.
Peter, first, happy 4th of July to you and all the listeners out there. I hope it is a pleasant day for all of you while we celebrate our independence and hopefully keep what these geniuses created so long ago. Peter, I got an email. I subscribe to your email list, and I got an email about a new threat, something that Americans should be acutely aware of, something called Poseidon. As a matter of fact, you have a book out, Poseidon, Russia's New Doomsday Machine, available on Amazon.com. And I want to get into that in great detail in a moment. I did read the entire book that you sent me, but before we do that, for the benefit of the listeners, and there are going to be a lot of listeners who have heard our interviews before, if you could just give them a little bit of background about who you are. And like I said before the interview, you don't have to go into everything in great detail because I'm going to link all the other interviews that go into the many decades of service to the United States.
Sure. I'm Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. I've worked my whole life professionally in the area of national security, specializing on nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction, electromagnetic pulse, cyber warfare. I've worked for the CIA. I was on the professional staff of the House Armed Services Committee, serving the 60 members of that committee as their expert on nuclear weapons and strategy and EMP. Then I served on the Congressional EMP Commission for 17 years as the chief of staff, working for some of the free world's most brilliant scientific and strategic minds, experts on nuclear weapons, EMP, and intelligence and strategy. Guys like Dr. William Graham, who was the chairman of the commission. He was President Reagan's science advisor, White House science advisor, and the administrator of NASA, and had discovered the EMP phenomena. He was on the defense science team back in 1962 at the Starfish Prime nuclear test, and was on the team that actually discovered the EMP phenomena while I was still in elementary school. So those are my friends, and that's kind of my work environment. That's what I've done. I've served on many congressional commissions and spent a lifetime writing books about these various threats. And the one that has always worried me the most is EMP, although now that this Poseidon thing has come along, I'm as much worried about that as I am about EMP.
And if anybody reads your book, and it's not a long book, but if anybody reads your book, they might feel the same way. Peter, the task force on national and homeland security and your position on that task force. What's the status of that right now?
Well, the task force is a 501c3 nonprofit. I'm the executive director. It's a congressional advisory board, which is the lowest form of life on Capitol Hill. We have all the disadvantages of being a congressional commission because we have to answer to the ethics committee and all that. And we have none of the advantages. We don't have any money from Congress. We don't have the power to subpoena people the way commissions do. So whenever the legislative mandate for the EMP commission lapses, which it did in September, the geniuses on the Hill decided to terminate the EMP commission in September, which is the same month that North Korea detonated a hydrogen bomb that they described capable of super powerful EMP attack. And then 2 days later, they released a technical report titled The EMP Might of Nuclear Weapons that accurately describes a super EMP nuclear weapon. And that same month, they decided to terminate the EMP commission. Go figure. And when that happens and we have to go from a commission, which is one of the most powerful forms of life on Capitol Hill, commissions have budgets and enormous powers. They're just like a congressional committee on steroids. We don't go away because I and the commissioners want to do everything we can to try to save the country from this greatest threat that our civilization faces called EMP. And so this little task force for us to continue the battle, it's sort of like going from an aircraft carrier in the congressional commission down to a torpedo patrol boat. But as long as we have one torpedo and one gun we can fire, we're going to keep doing it.
Thank you for explaining that, Peter. So this Poseidon weapon here, it says here in your book, Russia's Poseidon is a nuclear super weapon now undergoing testing comprising an unmanned automated drone submarine that can travel intercontinental distances and defeat U.S. anti-submarine capabilities by speed, stealth, and elusiveness to deliver a 100 megaton warhead, by far the most powerful nuclear weapon in existence. Its advertised mission is to destroy U.S. coastal regions, ports, and aircraft carriers by detonating underwater to raise nuclear tsunamis and spread radioactive fallout. And in fact, in 1961, Moscow had tested a nuclear superweapon called Tsar, designed to yield 100 to 150 megatons and make enormous amounts of radioactive fallout like Poseidon. However, What you're saying is that's not the purpose, the tsunami or the fallout, because whether or not a tsunami could be generated is up to debate, and also the fallout wouldn't make sense because the wind moves from west to east and it would be swept out to sea. So what is the purpose of Poseidon?
I do think you can generate a nuclear tsunami. Balance of opinion on that is in favor of the idea that you'd be able to generate a nuclear tsunami. But it's not an effective way of attacking the United States. If you want to kill people, you'd be better off using a single ballistic missile submarine. If it dropped nuclear warheads on cities through blast and radiation and fallout effects, would kill more people and would be a bit better doomsday machine than Poseidon would by trying to raise nuclear tsunamis, which, as you know, wouldn't be that effective in terms of fallout. That would be the biggest lethal mechanism because the weather on the east coast of the United States moves in the wrong direction. I think that's disinformation that the Russians have put out there to distract from the real purpose of Poseidon. There are two alternative theories I have, and it may be intended for both of these other purposes. And who knows, the Russians are crazy enough, they might also really intend it for tsunamis as well. But the other purposes that make a lot more sense militarily are as an anti-submarine weapon. During the Cold War, the Soviet Union achieved the ability to destroy our ICBMs, our long-range missiles, in their silos, and our bombers on their bases, and our submarines in port. But they couldn't get, they hadn't figured out a way to get our ballistic missile submarines that were on patrol at sea. And many analysts, including myself, think the only reason that we didn't get a nuclear World War III is because the Soviet Union couldn't figure out how to get those ballistic missile submarines that were on patrol at sea. And we had a lot of them. We had about 30 to 40 ballistic missile submarines back then in the Cold War. Now today, our ballistic missile submarine fleet has shrunk so that we've only got 14 Ohio-class ballistic missile submarines. And no more than half of those can be on patrol at any given time, because the others have to be retrofitted and resupplied and undergoing maintenance and repairs so they can sustain long operational patrols that last months at sea. So no more than half of them, and usually less than that, are actually on patrol at sea. So basically, our sea-based nuclear deterrent, the only leg of the triad that's still really survivable, is down to 7 ballistic missile submarines. And that's going to fall even further when the Ohio is replaced by the Columbia-class ballistic missile submarine. Then the total number of our boats is going to go down to 12, and the number that we could sustain on patrol will be no more than 6 on a daily basis. So this is a great opportunity for the Russians to finally take out that last survivable leg of the triad. Our bombers, by the way, have never been more vulnerable at any time during the Cold War. Most people don't know it, but our bomber bases have gone from 45 to 3. And the bombers aren't kept on strip alert anymore. They're not on airborne alert. They're not on strip alert. They could wipe out a whole bomber force in a surprise attack. Have high confidence in doing that. Our ICBMs. We've cut the number of our ICBMs by more than half. There's only 450 of them. And we've offloaded weapons so that every ICBM only carries one warhead. They've got very accurate ICBMs with high-yield warheads that can take out our ICBM force in a first strike even better than they could during the Cold War. So the only thing that's really survivable are these ballistic missile submarines. Poseidon, with a 100-megaton warhead, makes a lot more sense, instead of going after cities with radioactive tsunamis, to be an anti-submarine warfare system. 100-megaton warhead, and that is a nuclear super weapon. We don't have anything like a 100-megaton warhead. That's 10,000 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. It's 1,000 times more powerful than the average American hydrogen bomb. That thing is going to make an enormous underwater shockwave if it's detonated underwater that could destroy or damage submarines at sea out to a radius of hundreds of kilometers. So even though our submarines are quieter than the Russians and they're stealthier and they're harder for the Russians to find, we can find their subs more easily than they can find ours. They don't have to be all that accurate to be able to get our submarines. If they can get Poseidon to within several hundred kilometers of where a submarine is located, they can destroy it. And the thing that's scariest about Poseidon to me is this thing is artificially intelligent. It's the first time that a nuclear superweapon has been married to artificial intelligence. They're experimenting by launching Poseidon off a mothership right now, but I don't think that's how it intends to operate. The mothership would be destroyed if it was anywhere in the vicinity of the detonation of this warhead. This thing is supposed to be able to go on its own and cross the oceans and evade our anti-submarine warfare capabilities. And it can probably do more than that. It's probably programmed so that it could track our ballistic missile submarines. Every submarine has got a unique signature. And if it listens to that signature, it hangs around outside the port like an underwater mine. Then when the boat comes by, it can trail that boat and try to stay on its tail until D-Day comes along and when the Russians would want to detonate it. I think that's what its purpose is. And in order to do all of that, it requires artificial intelligence, because those are complex decisions. How to evade and defeat our anti-submarine warfare systems, how and when to track our ballistic missile submarine, and when to detonate itself. All of that is not something you can do with the kinds of clockwork, mechanical, non-intelligent computers that we've had during the Cold War. It requires an artificially intelligent system, just as if it had a human captain inside. And that is dangerous, very scary. Henry Kissinger, just in June, wrote an article in The Atlantic called How the Enlightenment Ends. And he's warning in that article about the danger that governments are going to rush artificial intelligence into providing for national security and into defense mechanisms, because they're going to be eager to exploit the advantages that artificial intelligence has. And Kissinger is concerned, rightly so, I think, that this will give rise to the kind of nightmare science fiction scenarios that we've been watching movies about all these years, that something will go wrong with the programming of the artificial intelligence, or that the artificially intelligent machine will become self-aware or something and act to destroy its creator. Though Kissinger, while he entertains that possibility, thinks it more likely, and I think it more likely too, that it would just make a mistake, because these artificially intelligent machines are not perfect and can make mistakes, and there can be programming mistakes. So do you want your fate and the fate of your children and grandchildren to be dependent upon an artificially intelligent doomsday machine with a 100-megaton warhead roaming the world's oceans that is based on a piece of Russian software? The possibility of something going wrong, I don't think I even have to draw the picture for your audience. I think people can imagine for themselves what could go wrong. It's not like the Russians are known for, well, they do have high-tech and good electronic systems, but they're also known for screwing things up, too, designing systems that do make mistakes and go awry. That's one of the purposes for anti-submarine warfare, to fight and win a nuclear World War III. Another purpose that could be, not for the Poseidon robot itself, but for the warhead, the 100-megaton warhead, it actually makes the most sense to use it as a space weapon, to loft a 100-megaton warhead into space and detonate it like over North America. It would create a tremendously powerful electromagnetic pulse. They can already do that with super EMP weapons that they've got that put out a high-frequency EMP. But the super EMP weapons are best at the most damaging kind of EMP, which is a short-wavelength E1 EMP. They're not so great on the E3 EMP, which is like what a geomagnetic storm does. And it is the Russian way of warfare to have redundancy. It would be kind of like making the rubble bounce with EMP, covering the full electromagnetic spectrum. And they could do that with the 100-megaton warhead. It would enable them to cover the full electromagnetic spectrum over North America. And the 100-megaton warhead would be better than the super EMP warheads for sweeping the heavens of satellites, which are critically dependent to our military and commercial existence, and would even make a better anti-submarine warfare weapon than the Poseidon would, because the E3 field, this big, long wavelength EMP that's generated by a big 100-megaton warhead, it can penetrate water. It'll penetrate all the way to the bottom of the ocean with an EMP, and it could couple into the submarine, especially when the submarine's got its long trailing antenna out. It's listening for emergency action messages from Washington. That's exactly when it's most vulnerable. It wouldn't take many of these big warheads to cover all the possible hiding places for the ballistic missile submarines at sea. And so I think that's another possible purpose for it. But I think the biggest message, the biggest kind of new threat that I'm concerned about from all this, what Poseidon represents, it's the first generation, basically, of a doomsday machine that's intelligent, that has artificial intelligence. The marriage of nuclear superweapons with artificial intelligence is a new thing. And to me, I think it is as dangerous or more dangerous than the original invention of the atomic bomb. And in my report, my recommendation to President Trump, I hope when he meets with Putin, he says no to Poseidon. He should tell President Putin, dictator Putin, that the United States isn't going to tolerate this escalation in the mutual assured destruction relationship. It's too dangerous. We're not going to stake our lives on the fact that the Russians haven't made a mistake in their programming, and that if they deploy this thing off our shores or deploy it in the deep oceans, we'll sink it. The U.S. Navy, we have a choice about what we can do, but we should warn Moscow in advance. This is intolerable. We're not going to stand by and let you deploy Poseidon. If you do it, we're going to sink it. And I think that if we acted in that way, It could set the stage for doing what President Trump came into office wanting to do with Russia, to establish a new relationship with Russia that could be the basis of a real strategic partnership, a new detente and a true strategic partnership. Because the Russians respect strength. They don't respect weakness. We see what we got from weakness from the Obama administration, where we're in the middle of a new Cold War, and Russia's deploying doomsday nuclear weapons like Poseidon. What contrast with what Obama wanted, which is a world without nuclear weapons. Some world without nuclear weapons. Now they're deploying 100 megaton bombs on artificially intelligent robot submarines. That's not what Obama promised us, is it? But President Trump can turn this all around, I think, by showing strength. By deploying the strategic defense initiatives, Brilliant Pebbles, for example, render nuclear missiles obsolete. I think that's an appropriate and good answer to weapon systems like that 100 megaton warhead to deal with EMP threats. By modernizing our military and modernizing our own nuclear deterrent and hardening our electric grid and our other life-sustaining critical infrastructures to survive an EMP attack, which is what the Russians and Chinese have done. By these acts of strength, the Russians will know that the United States has got a new boss in town, is under new leadership, that somebody like Ronald Reagan is back, who's willing to stand up for us, and that we're not going to let them get away with threatening the existence of the United States anymore. They will either have to confront us, and we have to be willing to confront them, or we have to bury the hatchet and try again to try to reestablish the kind of strategic partnership and a productive relationship such as should have resulted from the end of the old Cold War, but didn't because we were unfortunate enough to have Bill Clinton for a president. And he, frankly, screwed everything up by mismanaging our relations with Russia. And then followed by Bush, who was preoccupied with the war on terrorism, and then Obama, who was a Neville Chamberlain and a real pushover, and one of the weakest presidents we ever had, which has obviously given us the extremely aggressive Russia we have today.
Is Red China involved in any of this artificial intelligence that the Russians might be working on? Because as is pretty well known, or it should be well known, People's Republic of China is putting a lot of money and effort into AI.
China is probably ahead of us in artificial intelligence. They have bigger and better supercomputers than we do, based on technology they stole from us and then improved. It's all about the speed and depth of your supercomputers. That's what artificial intelligence is based on. And it's just a fact that they've got bigger, deeper, faster computers so that they are almost certainly ahead of us in terms of developing and using artificial intelligence. Like the Russians, they're a national security state. Their main focus is going to be on how do I turn artificial intelligence into a military advantage for myself.
Do you have any information that would show that Red China is assisting the Russians with artificial intelligence?
No, I don't have any information along those lines. But the Russians have helped the Chinese in every military technological endeavor, in the Navy, in their fighter aircraft, in their ballistic missile development. So it's hard to imagine that the sides are not also cooperating on artificial intelligence. As a matter of fact, we are in a new Cold War with the United States on one side and Russia and China, North Korea and Iran, basically allied against us, arrayed on the other side. And that's something that people haven't woken up to. President Trump is probably aware of it, at least instinctively, but the State Department acts like we aren't in that situation. It reminds me of how we were during the Clinton administration before the war on terrorism. Well, it happened early on the Bush administration, the 9/11 attacks that woke people up to the fact that we were in a war on terrorism. But we didn't know that through the 8 years of the Clinton administration. They were asleep at the wheel on the idea that terrorists were waging a global war against us until 9/11 happened and they actually hit us. Similar situation. Our State Department and our so-called big brains in our various national security agencies, I think, again, are asleep at the wheel and don't realize just how dangerous this new bloc is that comprises Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. They're all working together in concert to undermine the United States. And it's not like our NATO allies are as valuable to us as they used to be in the Cold War. They aren't. They've underinvested in their military. Their will is so weak politically, they won't even defend their own borders against illegal immigrants. Do you think the Russians and Chinese don't realize that and don't notice that and see how weak, politically weak, our allies have become? That's why the Russians are so aggressive in conducting exercises that threaten our NATO-European allies. And it's why the Chinese have become so aggressive, basically seizing the South China Sea, even though The Hague has condemned it as an overt violation of international law. We've gotten rid of our Obama, who was our Neville Chamberlain, but he's only been gone a year. And as far as the Russians and Chinese are concerned, they're hoping that the national security bureaucracy that Trump has inherited and the State Department bureaucracy that Trump has inherited will continue the path of appeasement. The president, fortunately, has been disappointing them in this respect, but they're hoping the bureaucracy will reassert itself. That's a rather long-winded answer to your question, but I don't have specific information, but I would be surprised, since the Chinese and the Russians have cooperated on everything else military, that they are probably cooperating on the militarization of artificial intelligence, too.
Yes, thank you very much for that, X. No, that wasn't a long, that was what I wanted to hear. Even though you don't have anything definitive, historically they've cooperated, so the odds are that they're probably cooperating now. I just have a question about this Tsar from 1961. You were saying that they detonated it, and all buildings within the test range, both wooden and brick, were destroyed, including the village of Severny, located 34 miles from Ground Zero. Was that village inhabited?
No, it was abandoned at the time they did that. Novaya Zemlya was their main testing range at the time. And those effects that happened were described in the 1961 test. They demonstrated only about half of what the Tsar could do, because they deliberately only tested it to half yield, about 60 megatons. As I mentioned in the report, its design yield was something like 100 to 150 megatons. But they knew that the radius of the effect would be so great that if they tested it to full yield, that it would actually endanger Russia and it would endanger other European states. And so they removed the third stage to cut the yield in half. So all those effects that were described, incredible effects, including sending seismic shockwave around the world three times, 5.5 on the Richter scale, even though it was an airburst. It wasn't ground burst. It was airburst, and it sent a seismic shockwave around the world three times. So all of that was just at half yield.
Peter, before we close out the show here, is there anything in conclusion that you'd like to apprise the listeners of? Look, since I've come across EMP and studied it and even read fiction books, as we were talking about before, by William Fortune, I think it was 1 year after it was dedicated to you. And these are New York Times best-selling books. EMP is definitely something that many folks are aware of, I know, because I've spoken to them, and especially people in the survival business. A lot of the customers who come in are concerned about EMP, but it hasn't seemed to really reach critical mass where enough people are concerned about it. I think that's probably why they're ignoring it. And that's such a small cost, too, of $2 billion, like you say. I know that that is your primary worry and concern, as it is of mine. It's very scary to think that if something as simple as detonating a nuclear weapon in the atmosphere could create basically a situation where we're knocked back into the Stone Age and it would take decades upon decades, or it might not ever happen, that we would ever come back to where we are right now. With that in mind, is there something that you'd like to tell the listeners to be aware of, or some way that you'd like to end this broadcast?
Well, first, just on a technical point, the nuclear weapon would be detonated in outer space above the atmosphere. And a lot of people don't understand that this is a different kind of a nuclear attack. It doesn't resemble a normal nuclear attack with a mushroom cloud and all that. If you were standing on the Earth directly beneath the explosion, you wouldn't even hear it. And there wouldn't be any fallout or blast effects or radioactive effects reaching you. None of that would happen. It's just the EMP. But the EMP could cover all of North America at 400 kilometers high over the center of the United States, all of North America, or pretty much all of it. Take out all of the United States, the 48 contiguous United States, most of Canada, and a big chunk of Mexico, and put us basically, literally and figuratively, into the Dark Ages. And the sun can do this, too, to the whole world, with a geomagnetic superstorm like the Carrington event. And what's making me reflective and a little depressed on this 4th of July is when I think of what's going on, where we are, my last thought is our constitutional republic is just in real trouble because it's not working the way it should. We actually have got the horsepower to do something about EMP now. President Trump made it part of his national security strategy. He's the first president to do that, where he basically said in his new national security strategy, which is the direction to the whole U.S. government, we are going to protect our electric grid and other life-sustaining critical infrastructures from cyber and physical sabotage and EMP. He's the first president to do that. And that should have been enough when the president of the United States basically directs the government that it's going to protect itself and protect our society. That should have been enough. And then on top of that, late last year, Senator Ron Johnson, who is the chairman of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, passed the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act. This act requires the Department of Homeland Security to start developing a strategy to protect our nation from EMP and to work with the utilities to protect our electric grid, and to launch projects even to demonstrate the grid can be protected on a cost-effective basis. So you have two things happening. You have the top of the executive branch, the commander-in-chief, has said we are going to protect the country from EMP. And then you have the most powerful member of Congress who has oversight over Homeland Security seconding that and saying, yes, as a matter of law, under the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, you, federal government, shall protect the people against the EMP. And in the America I grew up in, the constitutional republic that I grew up in, where the commander-in-chief and the Congress speak with one voice, supposed to happen. It's not happening. Late in life, I too have been discovered and been surprised by this existence of this thing called the deep state. And I was in Washington just last Thursday arguing with a member of the deep state about why are they not following the direction of Congress and the president. And these guys have all kinds of excuses. And in addition to the EMP, I don't want to say not only, because EMP is the most important thing, but if you take almost any of President Trump's issues where he has to rely on the government to do its job, to back his policies, these guys aren't doing it. They're obstructing us on the wall. They're obstructing us on immigration. They're just trying to do the best they can to hold the line on global warming and climate change as being the biggest threat. On the 4th of July, it makes me fear for our constitutional republic because of this threat that exists from this unelected bureaucracy that decides it's going to be at war with our president. And it's very depressing because, as you've noted, I've spent so much of my professional career to have my colleagues try to protect against this one biggest threat to our civilization, which is the EMP threat from man or nature. And we crossed the finish line. We crossed what years ago we thought should have been the finish line. The president has said we're going to do it, and the Congress has said we're going to do it, and it's still not happening. Sorry to rain on this 4th of July, but you asked me for my kind of closing thoughts, and that's what they are. We need to be able to fire these people. We need to be able to purge the system and get these people out because people are policy. And I'm hoping a year into the Trump administration, the president is finally realizing that the deep state bureaucracy, it's him or them. People are policy. These people have got to be replaced. If we can't fire them, they need to be sent off to do cafeteria duty or something like that, where they can do no harm at least.
Right. Well, don't say that. When I was in the Navy, I was on a sub, as you know, not a ballistic sub, but a fast attack. And I cracked a joke in the galley about the food that they were preparing. And one of the mess specialists heard it. One of the cooks heard it, and he squeezed a little liquid soap into my cheeseburger. So they could do some damage in the galley there, Peter. Unfortunately.
They would do less damage yes. than they are doing now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Peter, I want to thank you so much again for the time you spent explaining all this to listeners. I do share your sentiments about the worry, especially on this day, the 4th of July. And Peter, of course, I'm looking forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you so much, Dave. Always a pleasure to talk to someone so well informed about these matters.